Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is Cues of the Force, Quantum of the Force. It's our James Bond Star Wars mashup. No, it's Cues of the Force is Questions of the Force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and I am a fan of Quantum of Solace. I think it's a great Bond movie, but that's just me, I guess.
Happy to do too. It's a lean, mean, spare. It's about an important issue that continues to be relevant. The plot makes a lot of sense. Anyway, I'm also always entertained by that title because Casino Royale comes out. It's based on the original James Bond novel, and they're thinking like, great, this tighter connection to Fleming, that's great. What Fleming title hasn't been used? This very obscure Bond short story, Quantum of Solace. Which, don't you just love titles of action movies that just make you run to a dictionary? That's the goal.
It did. Dictionary off the shelf for that one.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to our brief episode of James Bond Center. We're now going to get back to Star Wars. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Oh boy, we are still recommending Padawan by Kirsten White. We are both going to start reading it this week. So by the time that this episode is out and you're listening, we are actively reading Padawan by Kirsten White. So if you want to catch up with our blazing fast progress, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Well, one more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook. It helps us and you get a free thing. Ken, do you have any Padawan thoughts at this moment?
Well, here's, you know, it's been this running joke of you and I about to read this book, and now we have two or three High Republic books and a lot of comics to get to as well. I this is what happens when we're in this wonderful, bountiful age of Star Wars, where you have shows. You and I don't just watch shows. We watch each episode 2 to 3 times and take pages of notes sometimes, which I love doing. And then you also have a book come out, and then we have to read that, and you're stopping to read it. It's just a lot, and I'm not complaining. It's just, I feel though this year specifically, three shows plus for me, House of the Dragon, Rings of Power come out. The last thing I want to do at the end of the night is read a book and have to pay attention. That's what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me is like sometimes that at night is my best opportunity to read, and I'll read like 2 pages and be like, this is great. These are great ideas. And then I will be fighting to be like, I can read each next word before falling asleep. And like, that's not the way to enjoy these. So I enjoy them the best when I make time, and I'm like, the thing I'm doing today is reading all of this book in one, you know, whatever many hours sitting. So trying to make time for that can be a challenge.
Yeah, but we're going to get to it.
We are getting to it. We're doing it. And then we'll do those next two High Republic books that we're behind on. But for now, we've got questions that we're not just going to think about or talk about. We're going to answer right here today. These are some great Star Wars topics from our listeners, two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we will go first to Twitter, and the a person with the handle, The Wookiee Riots. Nice. Great handle. Here we go. This is what The Wookiee Riot says. As a buddy of mine is currently forging me a Harris wrench for my Batuu job, wonder what y'all think about the ordinary everyday tools of Star Wars, the Hydro spanners, socket spanners, and power wrenches that make day-to-day possible. Thanks, as always, for the great show. Thank you, The Wookiee Riot, for the kind words and the really fun question. I don't know if we've ever just stopped and appreciated the tools of Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it's there, right? And Han calling for him in Empire it's a favorite little moment. And I think it's fair to say it's a world-building moment. One of the reasons we love this franchise. It just seems so lived in. Yeah, that's almost become cliche. How Star Wars is very lived in. George wanted it to be lived in. And I think that's part of it. And Han repairing his ship and give me the tools, whether it's in Echo Base or during the asteroid chase. I've absolutely loved it. I just, after that, yeah, you're right. I don't have a list in front of me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think that they're, you know, there's certainly sort of tools in A New Hope, the scraper thing that Luke is using on R2. But that the tools of Empire Strikes Back, that's where it really becomes, to me, like an important part of like, yep, this is part of that grounded, you know, it's real vibe that Star Wars is this huge fantasy and also this grounded reality at the same time is from Empire in those moments with Han and Chewie, because the tools dive into how much the Falcon becomes a character. It's the joke in A New Hope that it doesn't look like much from the outside, right?
Yeah.
But it's central to the plot of Empire Strikes Back that the Falcon's having a bad day, right? Down to Han's line, which I often think of when real world similar things come up, when he says to Chewie, you know, I'm paraphrasing, like, I'm trying to get out of here and you just pulled all this apart, you know. It's everything. It's Chewie's welding torch. It's his anger that Han isn't helping him with the construction. You know, there's that great clip of we just get to hear Peter Mayhew's great accent saying, "Get up here and help me. What are you doing?"
Love that. That's right. I haven't thought about that in a while. Love
but
that.
The scene in the asteroid chase where the yelling for the Hydro spanner, the very Earth-like box, right, of the toolbox comes out. And he has one of my favorite Han Solo lines of, I don't know how we're going to get out of this one. That one made a huge impression on me because Hydro spanner is memorable. But I think it really got in me deep then because I'm not a super handy person. But my dad is. My dad, you know, helped me buy my first cars, helped me fix them. And I've always associated Han Solo with my dad. And that's one of the moments why, because like, oh, wow, Han Solo has a box like my dad. And my dad's always, you know, pulling apart his 1950 Chevrolet delivery truck, which he still owns. The Millennium Falcon of my legacy that someday I'll have to figure out exactly how to honor that truck. But yeah, I think that's the depth of it for me. The tools are cool, world building, but that's where it intersected into something a little bit more deep and real that connects, you know, from Star Wars world building to my life.
Yeah. Once again, you and I have some similar things that are, my dad is he's an engineer by trade and also great with woodworking and build things. He can build his own speakers. So the box put a speaker together, and he tried. I could not pick it up, and that's just the way it is. But I think I have my little moments where I do have some tools, and you know, recently I fixed my kitchen sink. Man, I was so proud. All I did was unscrew something and put something back on, but man, was I so proud. And I think it does connect with that. And going to that Empire scene specifically, the box, the tools. This is a story in which you could imagine that if something's broken, you press a button and it gets fixed, or a robot comes over, a droid, R2, saves the day. And that does happen at times. But I even like Phantom Menace, that the droids have to go save the day. R2 has to save the day. You don't get to just press a button. It works. Flash to Force Awakens in the same ship where Rey's calling for tools. The one here that Wookiee rides is talking about, like, I absolutely love all of that, and it's not something, you're right, something I don't spend a lot of time reflecting on it, but it's there, and it connects to the real world picture.
Yeah, and it tells this story of people who need to know that information, right? Like Rey knows that information because she's grown up in a world where she needs to know what those things are, and Finn hasn't, right? That's what makes that scene so great. I love the Pilex driver. That's just the one by description that sounds cool. Yeah, I think there's also something that has a little bit of a generational power to it in the real world, which I hadn't really thought about until you were talking about your life experience. And like, obviously people of all ages have access to tools, and there are many things that you can still fix. So I'm not saying this is any sort of blanket statement, but from my life experience, which sounds like it mirrors yours a little bit, my dad grew up in an era where most things were mechanical in some way, and he could get a tool and some guy or some lady or some person could tell him what part of it to reach in and fix with his own two hands. And he's still mad about the things that he can't just go in and fix with his own two hands. And I think it's a generational dividing line with our generation of Generation X, right? Where there certainly are still tools, but we just started to grow up in that world of like, how do you fix it? Is you push a button. How do you turn on the TV? You push a button.
Well, how do you cook?
How do you cook food? You put it in the microwave and you push buttons, right? And that's so different than like, well, why don't you know how to light the pilot light with your own two hands? Like, it's a generational thing, and Han is in sync with our dad's generation of like, droids. I like the Falcon because I know every part. I can reach in there and fix it with my hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're right. I mean, God, I remember the day my dad brought our microwave home, this giant box, 1982, put some bread in it, warmed it. And my sister and mother and I were like, what? And yeah. And now, you know, I've taught myself to cook a lot more in the last couple of years and love cooking. And it's weird. And I feel like Han now, you know, I feel connected with it. Yeah, it's fascinating. This is a great conversation the Wookiee Rides has started here. Do you think Wookiee Rides, he says, forging me a Harris wrench for my Batuu job. I'm convinced Wookiee Ride works at Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, I feel like we've maybe had some interaction about that before, but I admit I am not remembering any of the details, but I really hope so. Either for my Batuu job, I read that in Wookiee Riots, please feel free to let us know that there is a technical job that the Wookiee Riots is doing in Batuu at Blackspire Outpost, which is great. Otherwise, my Batuu job otherwise sounds like just a great title for a thriller crime heist set in Star Wars, the Batuu job.
My Batuu job. One other thing I wanted to talk about this, if I may, Joseph, is this idea of movie fantasy things turning into reality, and Hydro Spanners is very of our world, but also of Star Wars. As someone who would like to be better with tools, but maybe if there were some space tools that would help me, and there's things along the way that, you know, even a electric wrench or something like that. You know what I'm talking about. Like, I would love that. And I'm fascinated by that. And Star Wars being part of that. You and I are both fans of Douglas Adams and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Anytime I pick up my iPad, I'm just amazed that this is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I even have the words don't panic engraved on mine because.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's an option through Apple now. Spoiler though, it's like a 6 font. So like you can't read it. You can't read it. But Star Wars, lightsabers, it crosses over Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in the movie version, where Trillian, takes the little lightsaber toaster thing where it toasts bread as it cuts it. Right. And it's very Star Wars inspired looking. And I'm like, I want stuff from Star Wars to start showing up in our real world a lot more. And that would be part of the fun too.
I love it when fantasy can be a healthy entry point to real world things. Like my dad gave me various sets of tools, which I've done only an okay job of tracking over my life. But honestly, if he had been able to buy like these ones all have lightsaber hilts.
Yeah.
And this is your Mace Windu wrench.
Yeah.
And this is your, Ahsoka Tano screwdriver. I would have probably taken better care of the tools, and I'm a little ashamed, but also that's always been the way for me. If you can give me a little bit of fantasy as a way in, I can engage more a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe if they just had a Star Wars logo set of screwdrivers, I'd keep mine instead of buying, oh, I need this and going home and finding my 9th Phillips head screwdriver that I've purchased.
Exactly. I think that's a great thing to look at and think about. So any other thoughts on Star Wars tools?
No, I love this. Love this. Making me slow down and concentrate on Potter Star Wars. I maybe rush past.
Yeah. And I just now I'm really just combining my dad's various complaints and imagining them from Han Solo. Han Solo sticking his finger in somebody's face and going, what do you mean I need to download an app? What do I need an app for?
This is not related, but my dad is a little bit of a grumpy Han too. And one time we went to Baskin Robbins as a family, we were walking back down, and like my dad was just screaming to himself, but to us, like, a man can't even afford to get his family ice cream these days. What's going on? I'll never forget that conversation.
What's going on?
But it was that use of a man can't even buy his family ice cream these days. Like, oh man, this
from time immemorial, a man could buy his family ice cream, but not today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in these perverse times. That's hilarious. All right. We're going to move on to a different question, which a serious question, but maybe we'll find some fun in it as well. We'll get out our emotional hydro spanners and see how we can address this best. This comes to us from Victor. And Victor asks, how do you approach politics when you're preparing a podcast? Are there red lines? Is there fear? Caution? Thanks for all. Thank you, Victor, for the thoughtful question. It's really great to get all sorts of different kinds of questions. You know, most of them are kind of internal to the world of Star Wars or, like the question about the tools of kind of how we relate to Star Wars. And I think this is an important question that isn't just like behind the scenes, how do we make decisions for this podcast you're listening to? But it does relate to Star Wars, and it relates to how connected Star Wars is to the real world or not for different fans. And I think really the heart of this to me is us making those decisions of when is it the right time to draw this direct line on the podcast between what is going on in the real world and what is going on in our great, fantasy allegory of Star Wars. So with that in mind, I think this is also a great question for right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if it came up because Andor is a very, very political show. And we've been talking a little bit more explicitly about politics on Andor, and we've been trying to give listeners fair warning that Andor is a place where we're going to explicitly talk about some real world things as well. So now that I've got all my caveats out of the way, Ken, I want to hear your thoughts. How do you... What are some lines for you? Is there fear? Is there caution? All of Victor's great questions. Where do you go with that?
Yeah, I think this is where I've changed the most over the years. And working with you and Jennifer has helped that. Myself, just finding myself changing about what I want to talk about, even how I want to talk about. I'll tell you right now, Joseph, I intentionally made no notes for this section in the conversation. I just wanted to kind of see where my heart went with this. It's a longer journey. I am greatly influenced by Steve Martin. That's one of the reasons I want to be a writer, a comic, and everything like that. And unfortunately, he's one of the fortunately he's one of the last icons that seems to be worthy of being an icon status. That could be tough, but even he is not perfect. But he came rose to fame and fortune and top of the charts in the 70s, which and he had a quote one time of like, you know, all my friends were talking about Nixon, and I got famous for putting an arrow in my head. And I think I grabbed onto that, and it wasn't like he was saying, well, I don't talk about politics. I just want to make people laugh, and I just want to entertain people. And I still want to do that. But I think I pulled that along too far in my career. And by then, by late in the game, it just not realizing that art is communication. Art is politics. Art is commenting on things. And yes, I am all for a silly little laugh, and I do them often. And I love little stupid little things. I do my little radio show on my own podcast feed that goes from serious satire to silly, stupid satire of me trying to order Del Taco or something. Yeah. But it's changed for me. And when it came to Star Wars, the dividing line for me when I was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joseph, I don't think prior to 2017, I don't remember ever telling you or Jennifer, we can't talk about that. I don't want to talk about that.
No, I think it was an agreed upon, perspective, which, you know, we can talk more about kind of the way Force Center has shifted. But no, there was never any edict from any of us to the others.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and anything, we always, and to the technical question from Victor here, when something comes up that we know we're going to discuss, say there's a social issue that's dominating the headlines and we know it needs to be discussed, or something within Star Wars, we don't discuss every one of them. We can maybe talk about that, but we will off air go, all right, well, you know, what are we feeling or how do we want to address this? I do believe in this day and age of caveats and a little bit of space and respect. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to go here. And it's our point of view. I do believe that it's needed in this era where tone and tenor can be misinterpreted, sometimes intentionally. I think it's important to make it clear. But going back to where it really started to shift for me, it was 2017. Last Jedi comes out late in the year. We go into 2018. I'm a big Last Jedi fan, and then on Jedi Council. Less here. We're very blessed for Force Center. We've always had a great community. Even if people who maybe disagree with us, they'll find a way to voice it in a way that I feel is generally respectful. Very rarely have you run into anyone who's just like, you're a-holes, I'm out of here. They usually just leave if that's the case. Mm-hmm. But Collider was a different version, and we were exposed to a lot more people. And I struggled with stuff, what was going on at first. I couldn't understand. And again, I'll say this, I think some people just don't like that movie, and therefore they're going to express that. I'm not saying anyone or everyone who doesn't like Last Jedi has a political take on it or a morality take on it. Sometimes they just don't like it. But out of that emerged conversations I could no longer ignore. And I started to shift. I started to shift as a person. I started to connect with what Star Wars was teaching me, compassion and empathy, and seeing things in a different way than I had before. But specific moments in discussing Last Jedi, I think I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again because it bears repeating. I had a real close friend who didn't like the movie, big Star Wars fan, didn't like the movie. And I kept asking why. And he would say things like, and I'm just going to say this, I apologize if it's rough, but he'd be like, I don't like that movie. It's got that purple hair bitch in it. Mm. And okay, well, that's some one thing to discuss. And he would link me to a podcast where a certain comedian turned podcaster had a long rant and theory about that purple haired lady in the film. Mm. And then out of that conversation, at one point he just said to me, I don't mind that you got Finn and that quote Asian girl in it, but why do I have to see them kiss? And it was at that moment that I realized in discussing Star Wars, you're not always discussing Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And that's where I felt maybe, and it wasn't immediate overnight, but it was like, all right, you can't leave a lot of this behind. And we could have nuanced conversations about tax policy and border safety and all those kind of things all day, all long. But Star Wars is about themes, and I approach it with my heart and how it makes me feel. And I think over the years, what Star Wars is saying to me had really grabbed onto my heart. And so that's when it's like, there's sometimes you're just going to be direct. And I don't need you to agree with my personal voting records or politics now, which, by the way, have changed. I used to be a lifelong Republican. I am not. I've always now say this if anyone looks. I'm a registered independent, whatever that means these days. Maybe that will change. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But I used to always vote Republican. I do not anymore. I've not voted. I've voted blue down the ticket for 5 years now, 6 years now. And trust me, that's caused problems in my family. Mm-hmm. I've lost friends for it. I'm not a martyr. I'm just saying that's a fact. So I've changed. I don't need you to change with me, but the final big draw right now is I will go ape bleep if you come at me with, please don't make Star Wars political. Mm-hmm. Because I think you are just factually wrong. Star Wars is political. It always has been. George Lucas will tell you this. The prequels will tell you this. Lot Dodd is not a made up name in Star Wars. Newt Gunray is, and I don't need you to agree, but I need you to allow us to discuss it because you can't deny it's there. And if you want to go to another podcast, great. If you want to go to the YouTube channel where they just predict if Plagueis is going to be there or not, go for it. It's not always what we do here. But also we talk about B2EMU and Gonki and Eopies, because Star Wars is that as well. And that's the big change for me and my opening monologue, and concede the floor.
No, this is a great opening monologue. And as always, it's fun to sort of see what is similar and what is different about our journeys in life. And I love that you started out from kind of your perspective in your beginning of being a public person, even a comedian who is not necessarily, you know, super famous. You're being a public person, right? Even if you're, you know, just doing a show that there are 15 people there, you are saying, I am on stage. I am asking for everyone's attention, and that the things I say have value. You are declaring that what you're saying matters. Because you're presenting it publicly
for other
people to sit and listen. So I think it's great that you start out from that perspective. And I think that's one of the things that I've changed. I think I've always been a very liberal person. My parents mostly were liberal. Then that, some of that shifted as it does. I feel like I got exposed to lots of different perspectives from various life experiences, and I've grown and changed and all that stuff as well, but try to understand where people are coming from, even if I vehemently disagree, so that hopefully can find the ability to have a conversation, which is the only way to even open the door to changing, all that kind of stuff. But so that's to say, for me, doing some of my comedy stuff, I always kind of drifted away from politics in a very Steve Martin-like way because... Yeah. Partially, I wrestle with comedy being is so very dated.
A
lot of comedy is by its nature of you're making a joke about what's going on. And like, I remember as a kid being really annoyed because three jokes on Johnny Carson would make me laugh. And then he'd make a bunch of references and I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about, old man. It's really annoying.
Who's Spiro Tiagno?
Stop cutting me out of the joke. So it was that. But then also like specifically during the Bush era, like I vehemently disagreed with almost everything that was going on. Don't need to get into all that. But I actively didn't want to make jokes about it because like it's covered. We know it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I've realized that was a little bit of what people talk about as privilege of I was not being as directly affected by some of the horror that was going on then. And actually, I was and didn't quite realize it because it was changing massive amounts of things, you know. But that was for me a little bit of a, oh, in retrospect, I maybe would have needed to work a little bit harder to make politics part of my comedy and find a way in that's fresh or interesting or says something different. But it was a little bit of a privilege to just go like, eh, other people got it. Don't worry about it. Right.
Yeah. They got it covered. Yeah.
Yep. So. And then I think about like, okay, well, how many people were like me and said, yep, it's bad, but I don't need to bring it up publicly at all. How much of that, you know, how much of, you know, there are many great quotes from great thinkers and activists about saying nothing and standing back while awful things are happening is kind of the worst thing that you can do, because by not saying anything, you're sort of endorsing it anyway. So I think I had a little bit of a similar journey in that way. And I think coming to Force Center, I want to value every part of Star Wars. And part of it is that, yeah, Star Wars is fun and it is escapism and it is absolutely political. But a lot of it, people come for just a break, right? Even from stress for that. So I always want to try to have respect for that. And around 2017, when it became clear that sometimes you're having a conversation and you try to give somebody the absolute benefit of the doubt and you drill down and then it's just like, yeah, no, I don't think black people should be stormtroopers. And like, okay, that's not about Star Wars. You know,
yeah.
You give people the benefit of the doubt. And like you said, you realize you're not talking about Star Wars. And the few conflicts or interactions that we have had with Force Center listeners mostly came to a blossom around 2018, 2019. And those conversations were people who'd been listeners for a long time, you know, writing us and saying, you can't say that. Your Star Wars podcast, you said negative things about Trump. You can't do that. And to which we politely said back, we're going to decide what we talk about and we respect your choice to walk away. And some of those listeners did walk away.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the healthy way to do it, of giving people the option. Like, nobody's making you listen to this podcast. So, yeah, I think for me, Ken, that's a little bit of my response to your thoughts and a little bit of backstory. I do have some thoughts about Victor's direct question of how do we decide, you know, what to talk about. But I want to pitch back to you and see what your thoughts
are. Yeah, no, this is great. I love talking about this because it comes up a lot. And I'm about to launch publicly a podcast on my personal feed called The Blathering that I've been doing on my Patreon page. And I think people are going to be surprised to hear me in that. Number one, there's way more curse words in here. I've been pretty angry last year. I've been saying it on this show that's private. And the fact that it's private, I just felt safer. And that talks about Victor's fear question we can get to here as well. But one of the things that you said there, you know, it's even come, I've seen it on the other side of, there's no reason to be nice. Just you don't have to allow, you know, you and I and Jennifer try to be, hey, this is our opinion. And even just about, I like Solo, this is my opinion. I do like that we do that, and I'm going to continue to do that because I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt of just being humans trying to enjoy a space fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I do have some friends who are like, yeah, I listen to you. I disagree with a lot of things you guys say politically, but I just turn those episodes off and I engage with the ones I want to. I'm fine with that. I don't know if I'm going to change your mind, but maybe I will, because I just opened up about my political switch. A lot of that came from the discussions here on Force Center of seeing things I could no longer ignore and what Star Wars was saying about them. And sometimes it's very direct, and Andor is very direct. And I'll tell you this, Paul, but there's about 5% of the show where I'm like, I don't know if it's playing fair in some of the issues law enforcement stuff, where I could have that discussion off air. But what the show is saying, what the show is doing, is really about experiences I haven't had, and I'm listening. And I think that's been part of what we do around these parts the last couple of years is just like you said, I used to be one of those, it doesn't matter who you vote for, it doesn't change. And guess what? For me, that was probably the case. But then finally realizing the question was, great, it doesn't change for you, but what about for the people it does change? Mm-hmm. And engaging with that. And I think Star Wars is very much about that. And we're seeing that a lot in Andor, and we're seeing that in Kenobi. We're seeing that in a lot of other shows here. I think it's present in all the art that's in Star Wars. And I think it became a point of we need to talk about it, but how we talk about it and when we choose is what we'll be discussing next. And that's also its own thing.
Yeah. And I think a thing that I have become more opinionated about just being on social media and getting to see it, more diverse perspectives and connecting them back to real life experiences and thinking about the themes of Star Wars is, you know, those great lines in Andor about the Empire's choking us so slowly we're not realizing, right? Sometimes in the real world, I think there are awful policies that maybe you and I have the privilege to not be affected by immediately, because they're crackdowns on people who are, you know, striving for more freedom, more respect, more equality, right? And those people feel the crackdown immediately. But in my opinion, the truth is we're all connected. And even those of us with great privilege feel those things eventually, you know? So it's important to talk about, you know, issues, you know, for lots of reasons, for who is being dramatically affected right now, but also from that great perspective that Andor has of, you know, all of those people are living miserable lives in a fascist, tyrannical society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perrin kind of thinks he's living this great life where he's, you know, privileged.
Everyone's becoming so boring. Yeah.
He has wealth. Yep. And like, but look, he's not happy. He's trapped in the horror of it too, right? You know, the people on Ferrix who are being brutalized are feeling the immediate brunt of it, but it's horror down the line, even all the way up to the privileged people.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something, this goes way beyond Star Wars, but there's something along, there's a lot of changes in the last couple of years, and a lot of it is, upheaval, not just changes, upheaval and changes. One of the things for me is going back, I'm a history buff, but when you go back and you look, man, not all the stories were told or we're learning new stories, or a lot of stories just didn't find our way. You and I both have discussed, like, Watchmen 2019 was like, whoa, wait a minute, what is that? I wasn't taught that in school. What do you mean I missed that? And I don't feel embarrassed or ashamed about it. I just like, okay, that's the way it was. I need to go see what else is out there. And part of that for me, this is personal, part of this, looking at Star Wars, it is a morality tale. It is high fantasy. I've engaged all my life on that. But how can you deny what George was putting into it, particularly prequels, but starting with New Hope and looking back and just going and seeing things again for the first time, ironically, to make reference to the special edition thing. That's been a big thing that's changed for me, where now it's part of my discussion with Star Wars, what Palpatine represented in him directly, Nixon, according to Lucas at the time. But even beyond that, just what he represents, that's always now going to be part of my discussion of Star Wars because it's there and I can't unsee it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you strip away a New Hope. New Hope isn't subtle. There's direct political discourse.
It's not subtle.
Luke's far away, and he politically doesn't agree with the Empire, right? But has no choice but to go to the Academy. The Tarkin, you know, wipe the fear at the beginning that, ooh, the voice of the people, what little still exists in the Senate, there could be some sympathy for Leia. No, we're wiping out the representative government, even the little bit of it that still clings, the democracy, and we are gonna, you know, the Death Star is, it's called the Death Star, it's a floating death ball, it's fantasy, it's over the top, but it's also just, it's a military state, it's just the voice of the people is gone, and if anybody questions my authority, I will bring a crackdown of violence. That's the story, you know, and there's clear connections to real world tyranny and fascism even from the first film. So anyway, To answer Victor's question kind of directly about how we make these decisions, I think for me, there are a couple things. There's always caution, for sure. And there's always a little bit of fear. I want to overcome that fear because I think I have been trained to have fear because I think there's a lot of people who, some of us just want to break from politics sometimes. I get that.
Yeah,
but a lot of times when you're being told not to talk about politics, it is fear to silence you. And I think I have fallen victim to that personally sometimes. So I think for me, the starting point is, what are we talking about when we say politics? Because a lot of it gets played with that too, you know?
Yes.
And the first thing is, I think, like I was saying, I think don't talk about politics is often a way to silence discussion. It is a way for people to hold views that they know are unpopular. They know are that a large other percentage of other people would see these views as cruel. Certain people shouldn't exist. Certain people shouldn't have the same rights. They shouldn't exist next to me. They shouldn't be on screen. They shouldn't be in Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. They hold these positions and they don't want to have them mentioned, talked about, or scrutinized because they want to be able to have them and then also not be made to hold any responsibility for those positions. And honestly, the few Force Center listeners who have walked away, that's been their perspective. You can't bring up that I think that. Don't talk about politics. So that's where I start, is I want to be aware of when am I allowing myself to be silenced so someone else doesn't need to examine why they believe something. No, go ahead.
Well, I know we've even joked about this before, but for me, I came from that side. That's why and I'm not saying side politically, just that view of life where in 2005, I was like, please, please don't make Star Wars political to like a specific friend. She was actually a girl I was dating at the time. And after Revenge of the Sith, I was like, you don't need to make Star Wars political. And she was like, he's quoting George Bush, the villain of all, greatest villain of all time, next to Palpatine, I would argue, but greatest villain of all time is quoting our current president. And this, and I was like, you can't, but don't, please don't mention that. Please don't. And so that's why I do speak a little bit from experience of I was that what you're describing, maybe a little less hate and fear mongering, but just as a conservative kid growing up in a small town. No. Don't put that thought into my head. That might change me. Please don't.
Yeah. Don't make me question something. We all should. And I think the other thing for me, there's more than one other thing. The next thing for me,
the next thing.
is I think politics, just the word politics, right? It can be used. The GOP has run for years on kind of vilifying politics, of saying the government should be smaller, maybe shouldn't even exist, but also please put me in charge of it, right?
Yeah.
There is a little bit of a power move to just make politics as something, ugh, who wants to talk about that, right? Mm. And like, yep, the actual, you know, gears of politicians, the fact that they need to raise money, the fact that they, you know, squirm out of saying, you know, firm policy because they want to be reelected. All that stuff is difficult. It's hard. It's some of the stuff that makes politics gross. But I'm also of the belief that politics is laws are how we decide what we honor and what we respect and what we deny in society. They're how we decide who we are, right? So I don't like it when just politics across the board is considered bad. The politicking that politicians often do is annoying. But politics is how we decide who we are. And I think there's also a thing that happens with the label of politics is, what is politics, which would be to me literally like, who favors this? What laws are coming up? What things should be repealed? What things should be reworked? You know, how is this person raising money versus this person? Politics, you know, that's different than, to me, human decency. The murder of George Floyd is not politics. Bringing that up is not bringing up, you know, annoying recitation of last night's campaign, you know, last night's campaign debate. It's about human decency, right? And that slides into the, can we not have politics in Star Wars? Suddenly means, can there not be powerful women in Star Wars? Like, okay, well, that's not politics.
Yeah.
To my definition, that's human decency, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's, we've talked about even on Andor of the different, you mentioned about the politics versus politicking. And there's a lot of times I've even seen positive reviews of Andor, like, oh, I've been loving the politics. No, you're loving the politicking. You're loving that. And it doesn't mean that's, I'm not saying there's a negative to those people. It's just like we are talking about, I'll just say it's why you can't separate the two for me. You can engage, you can have EOP days, where you could just look at the silly Yopis and the fun pod race. I have those days 9 out of 10, but it's that 10th day where you can't strip it apart, because the rebellion against the Empire is politics at its core.
It is there. Yeah. And I mean, I think like something that's going on right now is there is a rise in anti-Semitism. And that's a truth. That's a fact. But there are people out there who don't want you to say that because they have labeled it political and then try to create an environment where I feel like I'm doing something bad by stating something that's supported by facts, you know? So that's some of kind of how I try to wrestle with what is politics, what is political, you know?
Yes.
Because as we've talked about on the podcast before, we talked about it now, I do understand and relate with that. Sometimes people need a break. And one part of Star Wars is escapism, you know? So I don't want to spend half of every podcast being really drilling down on very specific politicians, very specific things. It would be super easy to invoke specific current, in my opinion, fascists that are in our government right now. Every time we talk about Palpatine, and I realized, okay, I do want to strike a balance, right?
Yeah.
Where when it's really important, we need to talk about it. But like, not every mention of Palpatine has to bring us back into the very immediate real world. And I want to find a balance there. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And here's one of the reasons to get into it a little. First of all, just we're human beings, so no one loves to get a comment of, you dumb blank blank, why are you talking about this, you dumb blank blank. And yes. I just got one in 2022 on my Game of Thrones podcast with, and we weren't even, I was talking about that House of the Dragon. It absolutely set out to attack the patriarchy, to analyze the patriarchy, and the audience is Daemon Targaryen, and it's trying to speak to the toxic alpha male mindset. And masculinity isn't a problem to me. It is the alpha toxic side that is the problem. And House of the Dragon spoke to it. Whether you agree with how they did it or not, it spoke to it. And I've had people, one comment, just, Ken, you're great, but you're dumb, blank, blank, real world politics, ruin every conversation. I just ban that person, but that hurts my feelings, or I want to strangle them, which is a negative emotion that I don't want to live in. So that's part of caution. It's part of what you've talked about. You're raised at the dinner table. You don't talk politics and religion. And all that means, yeah, we grew up with that. And you and I are definitely of that generation. And I think to emerge from that, when we come to our podcast and how we want to balance it, yes. Because I also think it would lose the effect. If every episode we were like, Palpatine means this, I think it'd become wallpaper.
Right.
And also another thing, and I want to try to pick my words as carefully as I can, for Force Center, this has become over the years part of our business, part of what puts food on the table. And you have to treat that a little differently. It means we're not going to compromise. It means we're going to speak out when we want to. But how we speak to our audience that helps us grow and keeps us fed in many cases, that's very serious to us. So that's why we determine how or the best way possible to discuss things. And knowing that, hey, today we might piss some people off and we might lose some listeners. We have to be prepared for that. And that's something that we it's always in our forefront too. I don't know if I said that correctly. I don't want to sound like arrogant. Well, we are a podcast that makes money. No, it's not what I mean, but you have to take that carefully, and we have a larger audience, which means they're going to have a lot of different opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, I have been happy with how we've handled it is we have definitely, when we have spoken out about something that we feel like we absolutely must speak out about this. So we are going to. It affects Star Wars. It affects all of our day-to-day lives. And, you know, we have had some people let us know, like, okay, I you know, don't like that you criticized this politician that I support, so I'm gone. And that's your right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like we can't let that stop us from speaking out about the things that we want to. Because I think, you know, to answer Victor's question, when we decide, of like, sometimes there's something going on that directly affects Star Wars. You know, yeah. when it was in the news, you know, around the Last Jedi time, about the horrible racist, sexist attacks on some of the actors. Some recent things with the video game development and you know, mm-hmm. do our research, direct quotes, all that kind of stuff. When it's directly affecting Star Wars, and to not talk about it would be conspicuous, you know?
Yes.
That's when I feel like, you know, we really need to address an issue. And then the other side of it, and what I feel like is coming up with Andor and came up with the Clone Wars report, is I really want to be able to talk about the heart of an issue, right?
Yeah.
Because when something just breaks into the news, you know, it can become about that battle of, you know, almost taking a side, right? And that's great. You should take a side, right? But I hope that Star Wars can open the door to the heart of an issue, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some things that we've discussed with Andor and with the Clone Wars. Pat, that political arc, there's multiple political arcs with Padme, but there's the one where she's like, hey, just escalating the conflict is only going to make there be more hatred. Instead of spending more money on military, instead of doing the morally dubious, you know, birthing clones to throw them into battle, hey, how about if we invest in this laundry list of social programs that are directly related to the real world?
Yeah.
Like, that stuff isn't necessarily like pressing on like the hot button of last night's debate.
Yeah.
It's about the heart of where do you spend your money? How do you perceive who we are as a people? Do you perceive that everything is us against them? Do you perceive that force and strength and violence is the first best way to resolve things? Or do you feel we're all connected? And if we lift one another up, it will help, you know, everybody eventually. Mm-hmm. I love it when we can talk about the big themes of Star Wars that are sort of socio-political, larger than any one specific issue of the moment, but are more about the heart of why do people believe different things? Why do they want to craft laws to create a society that has a specific investment? Because those are the conversations where I feel like we can, you know, all be challenged and not other politics, but say it's something we decide. Who do we want to be?
Yeah, and those conversations are valuable. Just I think part of the divide isn't around necessary R's and D's. It's just like people in different areas have different needs and trying to find that out and looking where those needs come from and how you can also factor in other people's needs. And I think part of the conversations around Star Wars we've had here, or the heart of the issues you said, have helped me change simply because you weren't grabbing me the show wasn't grabbing me by the collar and screaming at me. It was just going, hey, think about this. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in those conversations. And I think Clone Wars does that a lot. And how could you not discuss that?
Yeah. And it's one of the things that, made me fall in love with, Clone Wars is God, a bunch of the weird, fun action. It's got, you know, deep lore about Jedi and, Palpatine doing weird spells in pods. Yeah. But it is very clear about the political reality of the viewpoints that Palpatine is trying to create, the fear that everything can be solved by a raised fist. Somebody, you know, is always needs to be the weaker one in an equation versus everything that Padme is advocating for, the communication, empathy, understanding, helping one another. You know, it's a huge part of Star Wars, and it's right there in Clone Wars. It's definitely there in Andor. And I think for me, Ken, my kind of final big thing about how do we decide what to talk about is I have had some moments where I'm just like, I try to keep Star Wars, you know, it's a fantasy show. It's not real. But it is designed since the beginning from Lucas to be a source of inspiration. And sometimes it really helps me if I'm like, I really feel like we should talk about this, but I'm already kind of having a stressful day. And is this going to create more stress and all that kind of thing? I try to think of, like, if I don't say something, am I betraying Leia or Padme? You know, just actually going to Star Wars for inspiration, going to the sometimes, you know, saying something at all is hard. And Star Wars gives us so many examples of people who aren't just brave in turning on a lightsaber and jumping into a fight and risking their lives. It's about people who are giving their time, their energy, their soul, risking putting a, you know, a target on themselves because they have to stand up and, say something. And I think Leia and Padme are, two of the great sort of paragons of finding that strength.
That's great. That would have been a great way to end the conversation. I'm going to throw some kerosene on this and light the fire. One of the things too is, you talk about when we decide, and it's big. I said a little bit the business side is, and I want to, again, I want to reiterate as much as possible. It isn't like we're making money and we had to save our money and we're going to shut our mouths. It's just we have to be cautious of that. There's, for me, a partner involved. For Joseph, a wife, a partner. Jen's got a family. Like, we have to be careful with that. But also, we're going to, we know we're going to talk about things. We need to talk about things. The Padme Leia thing is absolutely great. And I just think there's a there's an itch, and here's where I was going with this. Like, I don't consider myself part of Star Wars Twitter. I think a lot of great meaning, heartfelt Star Wars podcasts are out there. And, there's so, every day you can find something to talk about. And I think they do, and they do it in a wonderful way. But I also just see there's a lot of fighting going on, a lot of screaming at each other. And I think it's the Saw Gerreras of it all. Like, what are you actually accomplishing? What is the message you're getting out there? And I sometimes have an aversion to that. And Force Center, I think we, again, trying to pick my words carefully, I think we try to detach from that and talk about things from our perspective for us to our audience and not get too involved in rolling up your sleeves and going fighting in the mud with each other. It's that Luth and Saw conversation. Are you tired of fighting with people who agree with you? And I think that's a lot of Star Wars Twitter. So we definitely decide to go different directions from them. But the other side of it too, having worked in this space for a long time, you as well, Joseph, it's different. You and I are of a generation where a lot of it was on stage, or you got to network TV, you wrote a play, and that was how you dealt with it. Maybe someone wrote a review. We are in a different time, clearly. Social media, parasocial relationships. We're selling our personality. And one of the final questions there, Victor, about when we decide to talk about it is, just as I said earlier, it would be a dubious at best, conspicuous, the absence of a discussion. People expect it. The audiences have changed. They want, if something's going on, yes, they might come to Force Center to escape it. And we have those shows. But a lot of times when we're speaking directly to Mike, there's an expectation from audiences to not ignore the real world. And there's those type of like stay in your lane type of folks. I'm like, then to you, I'm like, well, what is my lane? Because I'm a human, I'm a citizen, I'm a comic. Comics, not comics. Trust me, I could go on and on about a lot of dumb comics out there who think they're making points on the wrong side. But it's comics are usually on the outside observing. So what's my lane? But more than anything, Joseph, Jennifer, and I are personalities that hang out with you. And if you're upset and hurt because the transgender community is under attack for whatever reason, video game, the Eclipse stuff, you know, what's her name, same thing. if we don't acknowledge in some way, that would be hurtful. That'd be weird because we're hanging out with you. Mm-hmm. That's what we sell professionally now. So that's why the game has changed. And so when someone comes to me and says, why do you bring this into your show? You are talking about an old entertainment paradigm that does not exist anymore. Mm. You cannot do that. I didn't know what Ted Koppel voted for years because he didn't have to tell us. Now it is different. The standards have changed. And either you grow and adapt or you go away. I do believe that. And I think that's part of one of the big factors of there's some scuttlebutt here, this and that, but there's also the things that like we know our listeners are going to need to hear and expect us to say something. And that's one of the driving factors, I think, now.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point of just the world has changed the way we all relate to art on many different levels, on, you know, to podcasts, to each mm-hmm. other. Yeah, some of these things are they're not as far away, which I think is a wonderful thing, right?
Yeah,
that we know a little bit more sometimes when not great things are going on in the world, and they're a little harder to ignore than they were when we were growing up, which is wonderful because we have to bring difficult things into the light so we can mm-hmm. try to mm-hmm. make them better. And I agree with you also about, like, you know, finding that line, right? Of I think Star Wars really says when something very wrong is going on, you have to stand up and you have to stand your ground. And you know, in the story of Star Wars, sometimes mm-hmm. that comes to actual, you know, physical conflict, right? Yeah. I don't think there's any need for physical conflict around podcasts, please.
Yes.
But I think Star Wars also advocates for, you know, but just falling in love with fighting is opening yourself up to a world of pain. So what we try to do and what I hope we succeed on more often than not is just saying, here is something that is very important to us. Here is something we advocate, or here is something that's going on that we do not agree with and need to call out and need to highlight, that we're putting it out there. And you as a listener have every right to go, I don't agree. I'm not going to listen anymore. I'm not going to, you know, support them on Patreon, whatever. But the strength for me comes in a little bit more of that Jedi-like, Leia-like, Padme-like, cool. We all make our choices. Our choices, we are going to say this. Mm-hmm. And your choice is how you respond. But you are not going to stop us from saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Leia would agree.
I hope so. I hope so. I wish I could get a tweet from Leia Organa. That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. And look, final word for me is we're not always perfect and far from it. Far from it. We're just
always learning.
A little podcast trying to make its way in the galaxy. But we appreciate you all that have joined us, stuck out, or even those that have stuck around that are like, hey, some things you say I don't agree with or don't like. But you're still here for the conversations. You're still here for the lessons. I respect you. Maybe even more. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Victor, for the great question. And we turns out we had a lot of thoughts. But we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with some more questions from patrons.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back with two more questions from patrons on Patreon. First comes to us from Justin Jacobson. Justin says, "Hi, Joseph and Ken. I am grateful for all your insights on Jawa sales practices and have another Tatooine-centric question. Why don't the humans wear some sun protection? The Jawas have their hooded robes and the Tuskens have full body wraps to stay safe from the scouring sands and searing suns, but the humans don't seem to have adopted the same traditions of protective garb, not even scarves or shawls or wide-brimmed hats. Are they just spending more time indoors? Or have humans not been on that planet long enough to have adapted to it as much as the indigenous peoples? Yeah. I know Jabba the Hutt doesn't wear a lot of clothes, period, but he doesn't seem to go outside very often."
Yeah.
Different question on Hutt clothing traditions is buried in here that we might need to save for another podcast. But
yeah, and what Hutt hides can take climate-wise. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Tough hides those Hutts have. So, Ken, where do you go with this? Does it frustrate you when you look around and just see the humans out there baking?
Well, what's great is we just had this very deep, very real world conversation where confessions and things. I'm like, oh, good. A fun, silly Star Wars question. And my answer might be, well, I think a lot of these humans have the arrogance to feel that they can not only conquer the people here, but the climate. and that was part of it there. But also think a lot of the humans on Tatooine are there just to be part of the ecosystem. There's a lot of issues on that planet, but, you know, we don't want to go into it too much there, I guess. But I think that there's two things I went to. One, I think they got there, and I think they did misread it a little bit, and maybe there was a little arrogance in it. Ah, we're good. We don't know what's under those Tuscan sand people masks anyway, right? Like, I don't know. But I think maybe along the way, they just gave up hope that they're going to have good skin. There's nothing we can do. We're choosing to live under these twin suns, and there's nothing they can do. And then that might, at one point, maybe the style of the time, to quote Abe Simpson, is that maybe leather-worn faces were in vogue.
Oh, yeah. That's a way to show that you're grown up. Like, what? Look, this 22-year-old doesn't have any lines. They're not a real adult.
Yeah, or like it's like a sign of pride. Yeah, this is harsh. And this planet makes you look like this, but I'm here and I'm still here. So maybe it's a pride thing, too.
Yeah, what are you doing 30 years old without fully gray hair? Come on. This is a culture... The humans respect aging. Yeah, this is a great question. I think part of it is that we know from lots of different storytelling, Boba Fett included, that the Tusken garb is cultural as well as for interacting with the environment. We know the Tuskens have been there since there were oceans on Tatooine, right? So there's a lot that goes on in that long and storied history. So there's a cultural element there. There could be with the Jawas too. I kind of love the mystery of Jawas, right? Like,
yeah,
we know their little hands can be furry. We have, we've heard from Pelimoto that there's some fur going on. But I just feel like the Tuskens, it's protection, but it's cultural, right? And then the Jawas are a little bit more on that sort of, the fantasy side of it, of like, what is their deal? You know?
Yeah.
Do they have like flame sensitive skin or sun sensitive skin where they burst into flames? Are half their organs on the outside? Like we don't know the deal with Jawas. Like, why do their eyes glow? Right? Is that are there? You know, do they survive half on radiation? Like, you know,
you're painting an almost complete horror show, but also one I want to know more.
Yeah, so I love that the Jawas we kind of don't know, but it clearly is a little bit better for not being burned alive in the sun. I think there are a lot of things going on with the humans on Tatooine. I think there is some amount of adaptation. I kind of like ominously that they would have adapted culturally of like, yeah, you age quicker. The aging process is shown and that's expected now. You know, if a farmer is making another deal with a farmer, they want to make sure that you're solid Tatooine stock. You're full of wrinkles.
Yeah.
But I also think it could be some hubris, right? They clearly do have some garb, right? Luke has his little like cap, that little fishing cap,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
That little sun cap. Clearly, some citizens have sandstorm scarves ready to go, right? They kind of carry them with them like an emergency kit, right? Because we kind of see that a little bit in that Return of the Jedi famous cutscene with their desert sandstorm garb. A little bit with Jira, you know, in Phantom Menace warning about a storm coming. But that just makes me think of hubris, the actual hubris that I have experienced and taken part in. Growing up in Minnesota, where Minnesota outside of Minnesota is kind of famous for being cold. But the truth is there's almost no spring or fall. It's mostly brutal cold and brutal, very humid, high temperatures in the summer. And in both of those, I've had hubris. Like, I don't like shorts. So on like 102 degree days with ridiculously high humidity, be like, nope, I'm keeping my jeans and my black t-shirt. Like, and people are like, you know, you shouldn't be wearing black. Like, yeah, I know, but I want to. And then in the winter, right? Like, it's kind of a thing where you grow up, you know, being just bundled up by your parents. And then especially, you know, teenage, whatever, like, I don't really want to wear a hat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like literally 1 degree today, but I don't want to wear a hat. I can just tough it out. And I wonder how many of the people we see just wandering around be going like, yeah, I know it's not good to have two suns bake on me, but that hat's kind of dorky. Luke's hat is dumb and I'm not wearing it today.
I am right there with you on that weather hubris. I always say the line, style knows no weather conditions. And that sometimes burn me. I have some, you know, like all of us have issues with my body over the years where like I have very thin wrists, so I want to cover them up and it'll be 100 degrees in the San Fernando Valley. And Ken, why are you in a jacket? Like, never you mind. Even now, I love wearing beanies now because I'm a balding Hulk Hogan man. So I want to look like the Edge from you too. Ken, it's not cold enough for a beanie. You don't tell me what when I can wear this beanie or not. I don't care if I'm sweating. I'm wearing it. So yeah, maybe you're a little bit of a hubris or reason to wear it in Tatooine.
Yeah. Now I just want to sit and watch Tatooine scenes and see if I can pick out the hubris people of like that person should be wearing a hat and they just don't want to. They just don't want to.
Don't want to. And I got to think at one point, Owen, he was raised there, but I think Owen's like, I don't wear a hat. Well, look where it got you.
Yeah. And I think he's like, it didn't kill Klieg. And like, it probably didn't help Klieg. Yeah. Great question. Any final thoughts on the sun baking down on those exposed humans on Tatooine?
This is the wide range of conversations we can have here in Force Center. The very real to the even more real, the weather conditions and what you wear.
Exactly. Which means we're going to move on to our final question from Douglas Dubois. Douglas says, hi, Force Center. Star Wars has a long track record of seriously emotional scenes. Rebels going from a kind of goofy but far more emotionally intelligent show than I realized to having this grown man sobbing on his couch. Is there a potential really emotional moment or scene you can think of in Star Wars that could reasonably be imagined as headcanon that you would love to be brought to screen? Something like the Luke and Ahsoka campfire meeting. Sorry, I took the layup off the board. McClunky, says Douglas.
You did.
That is probably my number one for various reasons. Potential of a good, solid first meeting conversation between Luke and Ahsoka, because now we know from Book of Boba Fett, they did meet. Anyway, Ken, where do you go with headcanon emotional Star Wars scenes?
Yeah, I'm going this. All three of my answers, but I went through this like, and I imagine it, you know, we're in this Andor season where it's just like those very real, quiet, whispered, intense conversations, right? Where the performances are played real into the moment, not the other things in Star Wars aren't. But that I had that vibe in my head, whether or not that's where they would just follow me on this here. Follow me on this. Okay. I'll start. I'm so used to caveating and preambling because of our previous conversation. I have three choices here. I have, it's so depressing. Han leaving Leia.
Oh no.
It's right. Don't worry. It gets better. I am forever fascinated. I understand some folks maybe didn't like the fact that Han and Leia were separated Force Awakens, or that the big three never got together, and which, by the way, I very much, very much understand. And part of me wishes they had found a way, but a large part of me. But I am just forever fascinated by the fact that the great love of the galaxy, the one I kind of grew up with, hit troubled times, and that they hit a big stress point in their relationship, and it caused both of them to retreat to what they know best. I'm fascinated by the reality of that. I'm fascinated what it means for Han's character. I've said it before, I grew up a Han fan, but I think I didn't know how close I was to Han until I started learning more about him, and he learned more about himself. And the character has new meaning for me, other than cool space smuggler guy that I liked as a kid. And him running away from what he knows maybe he should do or what he should be, and running away to keep up to some idea in his head of what he wants to be. That's a powerful theme, and I struggle with it still, and will always struggle with it. And for that, for the great love affair of the Star Wars galaxy of my time, to hit these hard moments and come back at the end, I think I would like to see that conversation. I imagine it wouldn't be quiet and whispered at all for the entire length of the conversation, for all of it. I think there would be maybe some raised voices there. But I think I'd like to see that. A Star Wars, a marriage story.
with the Kylo Ren connection, with the GIF. No, it's from the film, too. It's not just a GIF or photos of Kylo Ren, Adam Driver pounding the wall. Kylo Ren and Black Widow divorcing is a very sad film that I'm not going to watch. I'm sure it's very good. I don't need that sadness in my life personally. But I went to a similar thing. I have headcanon. I think we've had this question before, so I had reason to think about it. I think, you know, Ben, you know, makes his not great choices on the planet we now know as Ossus. Brings the temple down. Again, that 4-issue comic series, Rise of Kylo Ren, kind of recontextualizes that a little bit.
Yeah.
But from Luke's perspective, he failed Ben. He had a moment of not being as strong as he needed to be, and for just a second thought he needed to stop the coming darkness, ignited the blade, turned it off. Luke blames himself. And in Luke's mind, is Snoke already turned his heart, and then Luke pushed him over the edge, and now Ben is off to join Snoke. It destroyed the temple, destroyed the school, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Luke goes and tells Han and Leia exactly what happened. You know, I think Leia certainly senses something. But I think there's a devastating three-way conversation between the big three. And I'm kind of in the camp, too, of like, yeah, I think The Force Awakens made a really smart choice to start the story farther in and jump into it. And if you'd started the story too far back, it really would have been the original trilogy's story and not the story of both the new generation and the original trilogy. Yeah. But I still wish, like, hey, shoot a flashback. Then I think about this scene is like, is that the one scene I would have wanted of? Remember when the three of us got together and all went our separate ways? Is that really what I would have wanted? I don't know. But in my headcanon, it's a really bittersweet scene, right? And I don't even know if any decisions are made. I think they talk about what has happened. I think they're devastated by what happened. I think the specter of Vader is floating over all of them, right?
Yeah.
We all feared this could happen. Something like it could is on the table, right? But I don't think they make any conclusions. I think they have a real bittersweet conversation. And then they all three just go their separate ways. Maybe we combine our scenes and then Luke sulks off and he just disappears. They never see him again. And then Leia and Han just have a firefight, a verbal firefight, maybe.
So we've just pitched this. We've pitched the long sequence here. This is great. We've combined to pitch this full scene. Luke walks off. They start doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so intrigued because, I mean, I can see what you're pitching of the fiery conversation. I can also see Han, both Luke and Han, just sulking away. And they're then, you know, Leia's like, okay, maybe we should talk about this. And like, they both left, huh?
Yeah.
They're both just gone, huh?
I think the fire would be from her. Oh, this is what you do, Han.
Yeah, maybe he sulks off so she can't yell at him, right?
Yeah. And I'm not advocating yelling in a relationship, but I get it. But like, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Some fiery old Hollywood banter.
Yes, we'll do that. Yeah.
That's what I call yelling now. Old. We didn't have a fight. We had some old Hollywood banter.
Oh, that's great.
Not particularly healthy. So that one was a little bit of a bittersweet one. So then I did think of some more positive ones. Do you have some more?
I have two more. One's really positive. One actually could be the continuation of the long scene you and I have pitched. and we may have talked about this before. It is Luke getting to Octo. And I had, when I was a youngster, I ran away from my home one time. All right. And I forget even what the context or why it happened, but I remember I was telling my mom I'm going to do it. And my mom and sister are watching. My dad's like, I don't know, he's playing the Commodore 64. And I was packing a little back. I was putting granola bars and Capri Sun and I'm out of here. And my mom's like, okay. And I got as far as the treehouse in our front yard. And I went to the treehouse. It's like probably 8 o'clock at night, but it felt 1 a.m. And I sat in there and I just was like, yeah. And then all of a sudden there was a moment where I was like, oh, I've really done this. Like I've left the front door and I ate my granola bar. And maybe about 15 minutes later, my mom came out and said, all right, this is not what you need to do. Like, come back inside. Let's talk. And of course I ran back inside because it was cold. But I imagine Luke going, I need to do that. I'm going to shut myself up. And he gets in the X-Wing, lands on Octo. The caretakers are like, we don't have a reservation for you. And he gets to that. And there's a moment where he just sits either in his hut or overlooking the ocean there. And just kind of goes, well, I'm here. What do we do?
Yep. Yeah. Do you think there's a moment where he stands up to go back to like, I can still lift the X-Wing out of the water? Or do you think he's committed from the second he's there?
There could be. Or maybe he tries to get in it. He gets in the X-Wing. He's like, nope. And then you see him sink it. And just the battle and him weighing why and him weighing, you know, giving into the fear and then the actual, and how does he go about shutting himself off from the force? How easy is it? How difficult, how painful would it be? Imagine might be a lot of tears. It's a stage play with Mark Hamill on a set on an island. Is giving us this moment. Cause I still think, and we're turning into a big three on the same screen in episode 7 conversation. I think in a weird way, missed opportunity on a big scale. I get that conversation, but I still love the decision they made and the generational tale and that ending with Luke on the hill is still one of my favorite things. Where it went from there, you might not like it, totally fine. But this is the kind of moments, it's tip of the iceberg storytelling where I could just imagine the pain that's horrible. This isn't something where he's like, I'm great. I'm so happy with this decision. He must be talking himself into it for almost the entire time. And I just would love to see that.
Yeah. This is our weird 80s sitcom comparisons to Star Wars. The episode where Sam and Diane like truly break up for the first time and they both go after each other, but turn around. That's always like, I think Luke has some of those moments where he starts to run out of the hut and then no, I'm not doing it. You know, Luke Skywalker, Sam and Diane, the same story, basically.
Yes. Have a nice life. Yeah.
So you have one more, right?
Yes. All right. Let me just, because I feel I need to clear my palate. Then you can close this out with something positive. And that'd be great if we hit the same moment. We're same moment here. I want to go to between episode 1 and 2. Mm. And I want Clegg Lars asking Shmi for her hand in marriage.
Oh, Shmi, that's really great.
I've loved you since the first time I laid eyes on you. I've purchased you from Watto. You're free. But will you have my heart? I want to see that.
You have choice, and here's your first choice.
Here's a choice for you.
Here's your choice. Klieg, thumbs up. Klieg, thumbs down.
That is great.
Oh, you made me think of one that I hadn't thought of because I hadn't been thinking in the prequel era as much. Padme asking Jar Jar to serve in the Senate with her, or to run for that, if it's not an appointed thing. That in
Misa?
Yes.
That would be great. So the whole Luke and Ahsoka campfire meeting, I am going to touch a little bit on that. I was thrilled to see that, it is confirmed that they know each other in Book of Boba Fett and have already had a discussion. Ahsoka seems in a slightly healthier place there than when we saw her earlier in The Mandalorian. And there's a recent Filoni interview where the kind of some of the headlines that were made were talking about, you know, adapting Tales of the Jedi, you know, some of the Ahsoka stuff, some of the Dooku stuff. But there was a really telling quote there, and I'm paraphrasing. People can find the article themselves, talking about how the Ahsoka show is going to deal with the devastating blow to Ahsoka to finding out that Vader is Anakin and having to wrestle with that. So it really did feel to me like, okay, we are going on this journey with Ahsoka. We're jumping around her timeline of her wrestling and questioning herself with what does it mean that this awful, awful, you know, terror Vader was my beloved master, you know, that I learned everything from Vader. So I still do think the possibility of Luke and Ahsoka connecting and Ahsoka being able to tell Luke a little bit who his father was when he was that, you know, brave, daring Jedi Knight that Obi-Wan first told him about. And then Luke being able to tell Ahsoka about Anakin's final moments. I think that is still a possibility that is on the important map of Ahsoka's journey. So I'm all there for that. But the thing that in that area that I'm most emotionally excited about that it's in headcanon is I want to see scenes, if it's animated, if it's in a book, whatever it is, I want to actively see people who knew Padme telling Luke and Leia who their mom was. Like the Anakin stuff is great and it is emotional, but you know, especially now we're spending more time with Mon Mothma, you know, Mon Mothma scene really telling Leia who Padme really was, or we focus on the Anakin sometimes of the Ahsoka meeting, but Ahsoka telling Luke or Leia really about who Padme truly was. Leia might have a little bit more, but Luke doesn't. And he's wondering, right? It's in Return of the Jedi. Yeah. Like, who was my mom? Like, I'm doing all this to be like my dad, and now I'm kind of meeting my dad, and that's a little bit of a roller coaster. Who is my mom? you know, and Ahsoka being able to say, let me tell you who your mom was. That gets me teary thinking about that. Final one, jumping to the sequel trilogy, is I love the ideas in the sequel trilogy that a lot of it is characters being haunted by the past. Kylo feeling like he can't escape the shadow of the past. Rey literally growing up in the wreckage of the past, and characters reckoning that the past has a shadow, but it also has, you know, inspiration and hope comes from it. And that Rey awakens Luke, and Luke makes this better choice to be a better symbol to the galaxy, but also to show Rey that she's right to have hope, right? And Force projects to Crate, and the great storytelling of seeing, like, okay, this young storyteller, Oni Oziah, picks that story up on Crate, and the legend of the Jedi who makes a difference spreads, you know, with the Tamiri Blegg raising the broom. And I don't need it to be Tamiri Blegg. I think that might be too on the nose. But I would love any moment where Rey meets a young Force-sensitive kid during the era of the Resistance, or even after, who stood up and tried to make a difference because they heard the stories of Luke Skywalker. They heard the stories of Rey, the new hope, and that gave them strength. That would get me going with the old tears.
Ah, man, we got a lot of tears flowing, good and bad, in this section.
Good and bad. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for the wonderful questions. A little bit of a supersized episode for us of Questions of the Force. But hey, the light side is not done. We have put out a call for this segment, Power of the Light Side, where we ask some patrons to share a positive thing, something they love about Star Wars, a life experience. Ours this week comes from listener Brennan Marr. Brennan says, I absolutely love Han and Kira's musical theme from Solo, A Star Wars Story. While I absolutely love the entire score, this piece stands out to me for several reasons. When I learned that John Powell, the Academy Award-nominated composer of How to Train Your Dragon, would be scoring this movie, I was overjoyed. When I finally saw the film, I discovered that my anticipation was justified. Solo is full to the brim with great musical cues and pieces, not the least of which is the aforementioned love theme. I'm a huge fan of opera, particularly of the 1926 grand opera Turandot by Giacomo Puccini. I am not doing great with the pronunciation. My apologies. That's me saying that, not Brennan. Brennan's, I'm sure, is great. I could not help but hear this maestro's influence on the love theme, which could be heard at its best in the piece entitled Lando's Closet on the solo soundtrack. The most famous piece from Turandot is entitled Nessun Dorma, which in more recent years became the signature piece of the great opera singer Luciano Pavarotti. I would highly recommend listening to a rendition of Nessun Dorma and comparing it to Lando's Closet. I love examining the musical influences of Star Wars, and this is one of my favorites. This is a great power of the light side to just really dial in on a very specific thing. This one great musical score, and celebrate not only why it's great in Star Wars, but the real world history of a piece like this. And I so agree with Brennan. I remember in the theater, I was just enjoying the hell out of Solo. And when that music theme, particularly in Lando's Closet, was just unambiguously beautiful strings, it's love time, I was like, romance is back. Romance is in Star Wars. Capital R, romance. And I was so happy. And I love this soundtrack. And want to dive deeper here, like Brennan suggests.
Yeah, this is wonderful. First of all, thanks for this, Brennan. Brennan's just a wonderful supporter. He's also a big supporter of my music show, Pop Rock and Radio, and he's always got a request, but it's like some big banger like Journey, like a karaoke favorite, or he loves Goo Goo Dolls or Dishwalla, and now he comes in with this just operatic side to his taste. I love reading this and hearing this, Brennan. This is great stuff. And it speaks to I guess I'll say hidden depth in Solo, but I think it's right there. I think it's such a wonderful film for a lot of reasons. The pulp adventure, the big lessons, the painful highlighting of the oppression of the Empire. But it's things like this, so much love put into that movie on all levels. Controversies aside, I think it's still there for you to enjoy. And this is an angle I always say, I don't follow the music stuff as much. I love Williams and Powell and Kiner and all the stuff, but I come to it a little bit later. People like Brennan, my friend Mark Riley, they go to the score. It's almost one of the first things they go to when breaking down their love for the movie. So I think I really respect and appreciate Brennan's appreciation, because it highlights something that I haven't spent a lot of time appreciating in Solo, other than I just love John Powell's score. Ah, the flying track is great. The Cloud Riders theme, I love it. And Hans' theme, John Williams involved in that, of course, love that. But now I will rewatch this scene with joy and looking for the romantic sounds behind the scene.
Yeah, I'm gonna rewatch that scene and imagine it's like an old music video, and just kind of like up in the corner, slightly transparent, is Pavarotti singing along to that great theme. That's yeah, great. Absolutely love it. Love talking about the music. I feel like sometimes I lack a little of the vocabulary to say what I mean. And I'm like, I like it when the chords go wonky. Like, what are you talking about? You
know? Yeah. I'm the worst. I'm like, you know, when it goes boop, 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 people are like, that's not even a tune, Ken. I'm like, it's the thingy. It does the thingy.
You know, it's the Morse code. No. Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Brennan, for that great power of the light side. We got some more coming. And if you're a patron, it is just a couple posts down that call for entry. So feel free to leave us a power of the light side. Ken, that's it. Where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us in a lot of spots. You can go to Twitter at @ForceCenterPod is where you can find us there. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Big live Q&A coming up soon. Subscribe over on YouTube. Hit that bell so you don't miss it. Facebook page is @ForceCenterPodcast. We are available on a lot of spots. Just search like iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. We do have merch available. It's Christmas season. If you're doing some holiday shopping, hey, there you go. There's a plug. Merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can also support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can do things like participate in the Power of the Light Side. Go to our Discord. You can discuss Star Wars with fans every day. And if you'd like, you can follow me at Ken Napsok or my website, KenNapsok.com. As I mentioned, I got a music show. It's called Pop Rock and Radio. It's on a thing called Mixcloud. Yep, it's another thing you have to get, but you can go to the desktop and listen to it. And it's really fun. We do a live music show and take requests like many from Brennan Marge. Also, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on social media, Instagram, TikTok. I am staying on Twitter for the time being, monitoring the situation as we go. I'm also on Mastodon. I haven't memorized all of the exact handles and things I need to say, but I'll work on that. But I am on Mastodon if you want to find me there. But if you're done with Twitter, Instagram is a great place where I'll continue to share similar things that I shared on Twitter. Also want to continue to promote my YouTube channel. Thank you for everyone who has watched a video, liked a video, shared a video, subscribed. I'm doing great on subscribers. I got a ways to go on view time before I can get monetized again. Yeah. So thank you for all your support. If you're interested in checking out what's there, you can just go to YouTube and search for Joseph Scrimshaw. More stuff coming soon. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Jawa's organs, wherever they are, this has been Cues of the Force.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.